August blends and quorum
Methodist Queen works on occasion.
Well, let's cut the bull.
Welcome to Rebellion Radio, episode number 27 for July 29th, 2012. My name is Hurley Commons.
I'm Alex Volova.
And I'm April Grisanti.
Before we begin, a quick shout-out to a listener of ours, Jessica Kane. Her mother, Christine, actually lost her battle with cancer recently, and Jessica asked us to give her a shout-out, so just keep her in your thoughts this week. Jessica has been a loyal listener, so...
I speak for all of us when I say that all of our hearts go out to Jessica's family and to herself, and we wish you the best of luck in these difficult times.
Absolutely. So, let's move into the news this week. We have little news on quantity, but quality-wise, these are two pretty big casting announcements. April, why don't you read off the first news item?
All right, well, Amanda Plummer has been cast as Wyrus.
Can I just say... called it.
Yeah, I think I was listening to Nightlock's podcast about this thing, and they did a flashback of our discussion on the Casting Fire episode, and I think me and Alex were like one of the two people that liked her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so as I always say, I know her from Pulp Fiction. Yeah, I think she's going to do a great job here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if she's in Pulp Fiction, she must be good because I know that's a good movie. But besides that, I don't know her for anything, but I do think she has the look.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
But, yes, Amanda Plummer.
Yes.
So, the next casting announcement is one that everyone has been waiting for, and that is Finnick Odair has been cast.
Whoa, I thought it was a rumor.
Sam Claflin. Well, I think it's safe to say it's... So, Sam Claflin, everybody. Let's give him a big clap. Horrible puns, that's the one thing you can count on with this show.
Yep.
So, Sam Claflin, he's our Finnick. Okay, let's just take him by look. Does he look the part?
Sure. Why not? I mean, yeah, he looks the part. I mean, I'd like to see him in something else besides, you know, Snow White and the Huntsman or Pirates of the Caribbean mode.
Yeah, I mean, that's the two films he's really known for. He's sort of a new actor, an unknown, as we called. He's 26 years old, so I think the age is fine. He's been, recently, the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean and Snow White and the Huntsman. I forgot he was even in Pirates of the Caribbean.
I never saw
who'd
that movie.
Play? Wait, who'd he play?
He played a character named Philip.
Okay. I never saw it. So,
yeah. But, I think everybody on this cast is sort of an unknown, which is kind of exciting because it's like they all have something to prove.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it seems like all of the, you know, Capitol residents or sort of older actors, they are more well-known, like Philip Seymour Hoffman and Amanda Plummer. But all these, a lot of the tributes are choosing, like, you know, Johanna and Finnick. These are a lot of unknowns, which is great.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what, you know, what he has to say about the series. Again, it's sort of a rumor, but I did see some places that it was confirmed and Lionsgate offered him the part, so... I think it's safe to say that he is it.
And if we are wrong...
the fans will have our blood.
Oh,
yep.
Yes.
That's a risk we're going to take.
That's what we do on the show. So that does it for the news this week. Emailing your thoughts about casting. Now we're going to move into emails and comments. Be sure to email us in at comments@rebellionradiopodcast.com. The first email is from Jessica, and she says, "Dear Rebels, I'm a huge fan of the show and have been listening since the show was only 2. My, how much you have grown up. This was the second podcast that I had subscribed to when I first got an iPod, only because Andrew Sims' podcast was the first." Oh, Sims, always beating us to it. when the show was young, you guys ripped on Gale too much. It was hard for me to take, having been Team Gale since early 2009. But I stuck through it. I'm so relieved that Rebellion Radio has matured enough to see that Gale is only a moody, misunderstood victim of circumstance. He went from thinking he had lost his best friend to watching her become insanely famous and return home, now in the arms of a guy she has just met. Then, having to work long days in the mines just to support a family, while watching the girl of his dreams make out with her fiancé on television, probably wouldn't have made him the most optimistic. That's a very good point, and yes, I feel bad now for all the Gale bashing.
Yeah.
I regret nothing, honestly, because my opinion on him hasn't changed at all.
Like, that is harsh.
Wow.
No, it's just people were mad at me because of it, but I mean, it's an opinion, and it's just how I saw him in the book, and I don't really think...
I mean... He's a fictional character. I think we need to make that straight.
Yeah.
Wait, is he?
Is he really?
It's a fictional character. And so, yeah, our opinions have changed. And we're glad that a lot of our fans aren't as willing to kill us now.
Yeah.
It's a nice feeling.
We got a lot of heat from that. But I think the movie portrayal of Gale helped in my, at least, changing of my mind. But, yes, okay, we haven't even finished the email yet. By the end of Mockingjay, Gale was the only one who didn't get his happily ever after. That's debatable, I don't think anybody got theirs, but... Anyway, my heart bled many times. Thank you for finally feigning sympathy in recent episodes, Jessica. So, thank you for writing in. That was a very heartfelt Gale sentiment. Alex, why don't you read off the second email?
Yep. So, Emma says, splitting Mockingjay is the worst idea since nuclear warfare. Wow, that's a statement. Fans will get bored with the slow first half of the book/movie unless the writers add in a bunch of random excitement, and it won't leave as big of an impression on fans so that they will remember what happened between the two movies. Thinking that the Capitol still runs the District 13 thing to make sure everyone's still afraid. Also, they probably use different reporters in front of the green screen or something. Also, I had an epiphany that if Hurley ever sings for us again, and he should, then he should sing I Want You Back by Cher Lloyd. If you haven't heard it, listen to it. It's even better than Call Me Maybe, and Hurley can sing it in a British accent. Yay!
Ooh, yay.
Another thing I found out is that in Catching Fire, when they drink the stuff to vomit up their food, that was actually a thing in ancient Rome. There was places called vomitariums, where rich people would vomit so they could eat more. Anyways, awesome podcasts by The Capitol and The Hunger Join the Rebellion.
Emma. Okay, so thank you, Emma. The vomitariums thing completely fascinated me because I did not know of this, and it completely matches, yet again, something from the ancient world that Suzanne has, you know, brought back.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, history repeats itself, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, it's still in today's times, too, with, I mean, it's kind of associated with the, like, medical, like, cases, but still, people do vomit, you know.
Yeah.
So I will consider I Want You Back by Cher Lloyd. The accent has me intrigued, but I think I have retired. We'll see though.
Come on, Hurley.
I don't know, my voice.
You gotta get back in the ring.
We could even get Alex to sing with you.
We'll figure it out, don't worry. So that does it for emails and comments this week, everybody. Thanks for writing in. And now we're going to move into chapter chat, Catching Fire. April, can you please woo?
Woo!
Thank you. Okay, so this is the segment where we discuss two chapters from the trilogy. Spoiler alert for the entire trilogy, you know the drill. So this week we have chapters 13 and 14. So I have chapter 13, and we just left off where Katniss figures out that the games will be including tributes from previous games. So we just got the big twist of this book. And this is really, me and Alex were talking about, the ticking clock. This is what really sets everything in the good, exciting pace that we want. So Katniss has a visceral reaction to the terrible news and runs outside. She heads for the woods, but that's forbidden, so she ends up in the Victor's village alone. And she has a hysterical fit. And I think I would too, because, you know.
Yeah.
That's awful. I go insane. Nervous breakdown, maybe?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is one fate that she never saw coming, despite all the awful things she anticipated in her future. She's reliving the moment where Snow read out the terrible news that's just changed her life. She's positive that this wasn't the original plan, but a change meant to punish her specifically. So, April, me and Alex discussed this last week, but Do you think that this was already pre-written years ago, or was this specifically to weed out Katniss and or PETA?
Well, it could go both ways, I guess. I think that they did write it out beforehand, and then they just kind of figured that it just worked out that way. Mm-hmm. Like, bad timing, I guess.
Yeah. As I was saying last time, I do think Plutarch and the Rebellion team did have a say in it, because if they knew the pool of people from which the people be selected, it would be easier to, you know, break them, like, get them breaking out and stuff. But I think it's just a perfect storm. Everything just kind of, you know.
Or, like, maybe they have, like, a bunch of ideas that they came up with a long time ago, and then they can just choose one every 25 years, and they just ended up choosing
one. That seems pretty logical.
Yeah, I mean, for all we know, these were all written out, and then maybe this was to be done for the 225th, but President Snow's like, you know what, I'm just going to change the order a bit. Nobody will get that.
Yeah, I can see that. That's much more plausible than what we're saying.
Yeah.
If the few people who've made it through the previous games die, the districts will have no one to inspire or guide them. So that's a good point, too, because, you know, the winners are these figures that people look up to, and now they're all going to die, too, so...
Yeah, they're the heroes that District 12 deserves and needs.
Oh, no. Batman, we'll...
I'll shoehorn it in somehow.
This is the fan rally.
I mean, if you think about it, Katniss really is a symbol. She is almost like Batman. She is inspiring the districts to rebel. She is more of an idea than an actual person. She is not alone in her, you know, actions. Everybody else is around her, making her into the ideal that everybody can follow.
Katniss realizes that with horror, that in order to save her own life, she'll have to kill PETA or Haymitch. So, I mean, we kind of got that dilemma in the previous one. What if she had to kill PETA, but, you know. So she has to go to the arena. There's no other female victors from 12 to choose between. And she worries that PETA will volunteer as the male tribute in order to protect her. She goes to find Haymitch, who's totally wasted. They commiserate, and she drinks too. Underage drinking.
Our hero, everybody.
Awesome.
we don't condone such things, but Katniss does.
Yeah.
Haymitch reveals that PETA will blackmail him into trading places. No matter what, PETA will head into the arena because he loves Katniss. I don't get this. Haymitch reveals that PETA will blackmail him into trading places if... What are the rules on that? If somebody volunteers, is there ever a case where the person who did originally get chosen insists on going?
I mean, didn't we hear something about this with the careers? How, you know, in the upper districts, many people actually train for the Hunger Games, and so they're actually saying they do volunteer and they have special rules for that?
Do they? Okay. But, like, what happens when they do have the lottery... And then somebody volunteers, but the person who got the lottery wants to do it. Like, if Haymitch wants to do it.
I think Haymitch should technically be allowed.
I guess that takes precedence.
I mean, if I were running the Hunger Games, I would make it so that Haymitch would go. Simple as that.
Get Haymitch, yeah. But, as we see, PETA's blackmailing him, which seems very unlike him, but it's all for love, so I guess it's fine. Katniss feels horribly guilty. They make a deal. During the last games, Haymitch was ultimately on Katniss's side. This time, she wants them both to be on PETA's side and try to save his life. She goes home, where Gale meets her. He says that they should still try to run away, but she says they can't. And then she blacks out. So, the next day, she has a wicked hangover. And I'm excited to see this in the movie. There should be a tiger in the bathtub, a baby, all that.
Yes, the hunger over, I guess.
The hunger over. The hung over. No. I mean, that one fits better, but people will know it's Hunger Games.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Katniss really just can't handle alcohol.
No.
I mean,
she what?
Maybe,
more or less she,
maybe
I don't
she's
know
just
why
never
she
had
any. Well, I can't imagine why she would, though. I imagine it's like, expensive.
Yeah.
But... You know, it's kind of showing, like, that she has weakness and she has to... She deals with it with alcohol. And, like, you know, she always criticizes Haymitch about, you know, being drunk all the time. She's kind of experiencing the same vice that he had.
Yeah.
So, PETA says that he's keeping the two of them from getting their hands on any more alcohol. He has urgency and clarity and is determined that someone from their district will win this quell. To do so, they'll need to be in control of all the mental power they possess. They start training in earnest, watching previous games, discussing strategies, and figuring out who their potential opponents are. They also start working out hard. Haymitch can't really keep up, but Peeta and Katniss feel somewhat better about things when they're training. Their families and friends rally around them. Gale gives them instruction in making snares. Gale pushes Katniss to think about what would happen to their relationship if Peeta were out of the picture, but she refuses. She wants to have a serious talk with Gale, but it doesn't work out. So she's scared about, you know, talking to Gale about things, and, you know, Gale, of course, how can you be mad at Gale in this book? I mean,
yeah, I mean, you really do see the human side of Gale.
Mm-hmm. And how difficult this all is. And he's just trying to get an answer, like, if Peeta were gone, which I guess would be difficult for Katniss to answer, because she doesn't want to think about
that. What kind of question is that? If Peeta were gone, that's kind of like saying, hey, what if I killed him? What would you do? it's such a bad question to ask.
It's a bad question, but he must be curious, right?
He must be curious. Well,
yeah, obviously.
Because, like, what if Peeta did question. Die? Like, I mean, he's not going to kill Peeta.
It's yeah. horrible
so,
timing,
hey,
though.
Katniss, so if Peeta were to die in the Hunger Games, you know, anything?
Shrug.
He's pretty much just trying to make his move on her, like, before Peeta even dies.
I mean, like, what can you say, though?
Can you blame him? It's Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes, exactly. So, before she knows it, the time of the reaping arrives. See, this is the quick pacing that I'm looking for. So, the reaping arrives. It's really just a formality, because, you know, there's, like, one female thing in the bowl, and two male things in another bowl.
It's ridiculous.
So, Katniss is chosen as the female victor. She's the only choice. Then Haymitch. But then Peeta steps up and volunteers, and Haymitch is out, pushed back into the role of mentor once again. So, it was all kind of just nice, swift motion. So they're whisked away but to the capital with no time to talk to the people they love and on their way back to start the games all over again. That concludes chapter 13. Unlucky 13 for sure.
Yeah, really? I wonder if she actually planned that out.
Who knows? It's Suzanne Collins. She's a mastermind.
Well, when we get that, you know, elusive interview with her in 20 episodes.
Oh, yes. Definitely. So, April, why don't you continue with chapter 14?
So, Katniss stares out the window as the train speeds them to the capital, and she didn't even get to say goodbye to anyone. Peeta tries to console her, but it doesn't really work, and Katniss puts her game face on and focuses on her mission, which is to get Peeta through the games.
So have they officially agreed to that, like, all of them, or is that just her own personal plan?
I think that's just her own plan.
Okay.
I think so.
Peeta doesn't know it. Nah. So Peeta doesn't know any of that?
They never tell Peeta anything, do they?
he's always kept in the dark.
Poor Peeta.
That night she has dinner with Peeta, Effie, and Haymitch, and after they find out who else got picked for the games. The competition includes some guys named Brutus and Finnick, and Shaff, and a woman named Cecilia and Joanna, and Katniss knows a little about them, but not much. So, Katniss goes to bed, only to suffer through more awful nightmares. And she gets up in the middle of the night and finds Peeta watching old games again. And they hug. So cute. Aww. Imagine that moment in the movie. Anyway. A train worker brings them a snack, and Katniss and Peeta guess that the people of Penem may not be too pleased about their beloved victors having to take another stab at the games. After all, the victors are the district's local celebrities and are supposed to be excused from all other games.
I mean, I do think it was part of, it kind of worked to, in theory, it would have worked to, like, quell the rebellion, but at the same time, you're taking the people that you swore would not have to go back in, and you're making them go back in, and if people aren't mad at you now for that, they're going to be mad at you, right? I mean, yeah. Wouldn't that make them more susceptible to rebellion? It just seems kind of like a cheap shot, you know?
No, I agree.
Capital doesn't think things through as much as we think they do. Like,
yeah. I mean, on one hand, you are taking away hope, but on the other hand, you're putting them in a situation of desperation where they're so angry. It's just anger. Sometimes anger can be as powerful. And the other thing I wanted to mention was how do they get their hands on these games? PETA just popped in like an old VHS of a game and is just watching it. Like
I would love to imagine they have VHSs in the future.
Oh my god.
Or maybe Betamax lived.
Maybe they went back to that. Maybe that it's not as futuristic and they went back to all that stuff. Especially maybe. In District 12 and stuff.
Yeah, so maybe they use Betamax, but like, can anybody just get their, like, I'm wondering what the, you know, how they would find taped games. Would you have to be a previous tribute? I don't know. But
maybe they sell them on DVD, you know, season one of the Hunger Games.
That's funny. Yeah. That'd be hilarious. I mean, horrible, but hilarious.
Yeah. We're messed up people on this podcast.
Oh.
Oh, God.
The Hunger Games conundrum is coming back.
Yep.
They decide to keep reviewing tapes and watch the one with Haymitch, which they have never seen before.
Love this.
It's the last quarter quell, so there were twice as many tributes as usual. The tape reveals the whole process, starting with the reapings. They pay attention to the reaping in 12, when Katniss's mother's friend, Maisley, was called in.
See, this is the whole Madge's connection to the game, so...
See, she's not even in the movie anymore, so what are they going to do for Maisley? That whole plot line.
It might just be a random tribute.
Yeah, I'll just say Maisley Donner. That's true. Or Donner, or whatever. Yeah.
Well, Katniss realizes that Maisley was the
owner. Oh, wait, hold on.
Are you done?
Maisley Donner was the original owner of the Mockingjay pin.
Yep.
So maybe,
so,
like, I don't know.
They would have to do something,
right? Well, maybe there'll be something like, I don't know, Maisley was related to the woman at the hall. Maybe. And it's like, keep this.
Oh, Gracie says, no. Mom.
Maybe she was living alone or something when she got chosen, and she had the pin.
And the peacekeeper sold the pin to, like, the black market, you know, make a quick buck.
No, maybe somebody found it and was like, hey, I can sell this. And then they gave it to...
It would make like logical sense, but it's just like, yeah,
it's
still convoluted.
Neat. It's not as
not
clean as the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm skipping that one because we already talked about it. They watch an interview with Haymitch and Caesar Flickman, then they see the tributes being directed into the arena. The arena is beautiful and lethal. Haymitch gets supplies right away, and the fighting begins, and the tributes drop like flies. Meanwhile, Maisley is hanging in there, and she and Haymitch temporarily become allies. Then she decides to go out on her own. Haymitch discovers that the arena doesn't just end, but has some kind of force field around it that sends whatever's thrown at it straight back. Maisley dies, as do some others, until it's down to Haymitch and one other person. The other girl's beating Haymitch, but he outsmarts her. The girl throws her weapon at Haymitch, and it disappears, only to hit the force field and rebound upon her. Haymitch wins. After they're done watching, Katniss and PETA think about Haymitch's strategy. Haymitch comes in. Katniss thinks Haymitch is like her. They both outsmarted the Capitol and it saved their lives. She thinks they can work together. Dun dun dun.
Okay, so a lot of things that we just got in this chapter. Well, first of all, I really hope they handle this well. I really do want a well-thought-out sequence of how they're going to do this whole flashback thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really interesting, because you always wonder, you know, Haymitch is a drunk, but, you know, yet he's this smart, cunning guy.
Right.
So it's really cool to see that. And also just the fact that we do see specifics from other games is just... It just adds to this whole scope of this book and, like, the rest... And how the trilogy will expand.
Right.
So, in that sense, it's awesome.
I mean, I really hope this is actually, you know, done like a TV show. I want, you know, to feel like I'm watching, like, a TV screen. Maybe even to skip to different parts of what's happening. They, I don't know, click the fast forward and there's a bloop, and then get to another scene.
I mean, yeah, I hope they do keep it in the context that they are watching, like, a Capitol-issued tape of it. So it'll probably have all the Caesar stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Giving us nice exposition. Like, and yeah. Here is the 50th anniversary of the Hunger Games, where twice as many tributes are chosen.
Probably. Also, before we just move on, go to YouTube, type in Hunger Games, the second quarter quell, and watch the version made by Mainstay Pro. It is brilliantly
really
awesome. It's, Alex, have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
Here, let me send you a quick link. basically Mainstay Pro, this production company, made their own version of the scene, and it is really good. Well, really well done. So that does it for Chapter Chat this week, everybody. Please email in your thoughts about Chapters 13 and 14, what you think about the lottery system, if it was rigged, what do you think about Haymitch's games, or better yet, read Chapters 15 and 16 for next episode, and we will read off your thoughts on the air. So to end the show this week, we have Hrock. Hrock, or Hunger Games Rock, is where we close the show each week with a musical selection of one of the host's choice that we think fits well with the Hunger Games. Alex, this is your week. Go ahead.
I chose the song In the Flesh, by Pink Floyd, which, if you are a long-time listener, or even a short-time listener, you may realize that this is my absolute favorite band. This is my absolute favorite album, The Wall. I highly recommend you listen to it. So the reason I chose In the Flesh is because it starts out with lyrics. So Soya thought you might like to go to the show to feel the warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow. Tell me if something's eluding you, sunshine. Isn't this not what you expected to see? If you want to find out what's behind these cold eyes, you just have to claw your way through this disguise. And to me, that is exactly what goes on inside of a tribute's head. You know, when they're staying on stage in front of all of Panem, and they just have to put on a face, pretend like they're enjoying themselves, when really, deep down inside, they're dying.
I don't buy it. I think it's hipster bullcrap, honestly.
Pink Floyd is not
hipster. I'm kidding. It's good. It's good. I like Pink Floyd. So, thank you, Alex, for that. So, that does it for the show, everybody. Be sure to visit Rebellion Radio Podcast for everything about the show. You'll find handy links to our iTunes and Tumblr, and you can stay updated through our Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/rrpodcast and twitter.com/rrpodcast. And, of course, discuss with other listeners in the comments section. Contact us for anything at all at comments@rebellionradiopodcast.com. Be sure to leave us our iTunes review. That is a very helpful way to support the show. So, thanks again, everyone, very much for listening. I'm Harley Commons.
I'm Alex Bolva.
And I'm April Grisanti.
Fight the Capitol and the hipsters. Join their band.
really comes back?
Well, we can just smack talk him, and then, you know, when he's editing this, he'll hear all of it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm reprising my Batman voice.
Oh, my God.
Hello, Rebellion Radio. I'm Batman. May I approve of this message?
I would go to my Homestuck voices, but I don't think the listeners know who at Homestuck is. I was never a Batman person, so...
I enjoy the movies, not really the comic books.
Or I'm a Spider-Man movies. Person.
Hello?
Hey, we just gave you some bloopers.
Sorry, what happened?
We've been making bloopers.